Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Who doesn't love shopping at Target? Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target? And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day. But wait, there's more. Now you've got a new way to save with Target Circle 360. With unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's. Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership. That's $50 off the regular price. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same-day delivery is subject to terms, applies to orders over $35. For a 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am all in.
More, more, more. I want to kiss you more.
I am all in with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
All right, so here we are, guys. I finally have my mic.
Oh, you sound amazing coming
from sounds better, right?
Canada. How is Canada?
It's a lovely place, and the people are lovely. That's the word I'm using now for
that's
Canadians.
Sweet. They are very nice.
Lovely.
Yeah.
They are really nice people.
What's the weather there in Nova Scotia?
It's summery and it's warm. Yeah, it's hot and humid. It's like 85, 80, 75. It's really nice. Yeah.
Humidity is rough.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, when you're working, we were working downtown Halifax yesterday, and it was a little muggy, but it was okay, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get to this episode.
How about the big one?
Let's, you know, Tara, kick us off, and we'll get into this.
Take over for Danielle, since she's out today.
Oh, yeah, Danielle's on a plane, everybody. She's coming back from New York. She'll be here next week.
Yeah. So this is season 3, episode 16, The Big One. Air date was February 25th, 2003. The synopsis is Lorelai and Rory are anxiously awaiting Rory's acceptance letter from Harvard and surprisingly get more than what she expected. Paris takes a big relationship step forward with Jamie, but a step back when it comes to Harvard. Meanwhile, the two of them have to team up to give a speech for Chilton's bicentennial. Max is back in the picture as Lorelai runs into him at the pharmacy and speech event. But is he really over her?
Mm. Okay, I'm just going to say this, and then I'm going to let you, Amy, take us through this. Okay, but okay. I just want to say this at the top of the podcast. This episode was flawless.
I agree.
There wasn't a hole. There wasn't.
I totally agree.
I mean, it was one of the best experiences I've had viewing any kind of an episode, and definitely, I think it's my number one Gilmore episode so far.
I feel the same. And we did not talk. We did not talk last night to see if each other liked it. Mm-mm. I, at the end, walked out of my bedroom into the kitchen and said, well, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it. Yeah. That's bang. That's like, were we separated at birth? Do you think maybe something? What's going on?
I think so, because that was.
Wow.
Everything.
Everything. That is how you balance the humor, which was constant and great, with a little bit of drama, not a lot of drama. It had the right tone, you know, a little bit. Interesting that Emily was not in this episode. Even though she was in the episode because they referred to her, she wasn't. Right. We didn't see her.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was a relief or what it. I don't know if Emily, you know, it makes me question whether when Emily comes on screen, everybody gets tense. Mm. You know, what physiological effect she has on an audience.
Wow, but that is interesting.
I look forward to it, but I loved, and here's what we're talking about, character rehab. When I texted you, I said, ask me about this, because it especially applies for Richard in Paris, who I thought Ed Herman gave the performance of all time in this episode.
And
it wasn't even super dramatic. It was just sort of his comedy skills
nuanced, were
just beautiful.
Bravo, Liza Weil. Is that how you say her last name?
Yeah.
Paris Geller. Mm-hmm. That performance, bravo. Mm-hmm. That was so amazing. Keep going about Ed Herman, but we'll get to it.
Well, why don't you take us through the episode? And I'll get to that stuff. I don't want to just talk about what I love so much about the episode right at the top. So let's spread it out a little bit.
You know what I mean? We'll just go through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the first scene, we sort of get the setup that, oh my gosh, the college acceptances are coming. Mm-hmm. And then we encounter Postman Kirk, which was...
always has a new job.
Right.
And always sort of floundering at it. Right.
But a big episode right off the top, because this is what Lorelai's been doing for 17 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting her ready to get to Harvard. You know, I mean, this is like and it was the big one. That's the big episode, the big one. It was. Keep going.
And some funny lines where they, you know, Lorelai says something to the effect of, if it's big, you're in. If it's little, you'll have to marry rich. Just very quick lines. Yeah, and then we also learn that Mrs. Rita Flora has died. Mm-hmm. She must be a Stars Hollow town member. We didn't really know.
I'm going to Google Rita Flora. That's got to be an historical reference somehow.
Maybe. I don't know. I just assumed she was someone that lived in the town that Kirk had her mail.
Rita Flora.
And they call him Santa, which I thought was funny. Oh. And his shirt says mail carrier. So, you know, I love Kirk as the postman. I thought that was all great. Mm-hmm. So we go from there to Luke's, which was quite a significant scene, because we learn there are new menus because of Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's still with Nicole. Like, we haven't heard about Nicole in a couple weeks.
And it spawned one of the great lines, you've been menu whipped.
That was a brilliant Luke Lorelai scene.
Yeah.
Because they're just ping ponging like we love. Obviously, they love each other, even though.
What was the menu item that?
Monte Cristo.
The Monte Cristo sandwich, yeah.
Yeah.
But I love that it was on the menu just because it was, maybe I could order it. Not that I ever have.
They said it's a conversation piece. You've eliminated a conversation piece. Right. I actually didn't know what a Monte Cristo was. I had the.
Oh, they're so good.
Is it like a reverse grilled cheese with ham?
It's got tomato and ham and cheese.
I don't think it has tomato.
Huh?
Hold on.
Yeah, I don't know if it has,
you know, Croque Monsieur. What? I don't know how you say that.
Croque Monsieur?
I looked it up. So there's like a sandwich that's on menus, like Croque Monsieur, which I think is a fancy way of saying grilled cheese. I think the Monte Cristo is like deep fried.
It's with ham, deep turkey, fried. And Swiss cheese.
Ooh, that's
and it's
a good
dipped
one.
In egg batter. Oh, custard, that's and deep oh. fried. Yeah.
So bad for you, but so good.
Yeah, so good.
I don't know that I've ever had a Monte Cristo.
Oh, I've had one.
Do they, we're going to need to track down.
They have some at, Amy, they have some at Disneyland.
I was going to say Disneyland. I knew Tara was going to say Disneyland.
Yeah, that's where I caught it.
Where? They,
it's at, I mean, it's like if you want location
in New Orleans Square.
Correct,
obviously.
New Orleans Square. And you can dip it in like,
Blue Bayou.
Like a Blue Bayou is a restaurant.
Blue Bayou.
But they now serve it outside of the Blue Bayou, so you don't have to make a reservation. You can just order it and get it. And they have like a jelly, like a jam that you can dip it in. Oh, it's so good. Mm. Maybe I should go, maybe next time, like you're here, Amy, I should go get one and like bring it to you.
Well, wait a minute, where are you? Where are you near Disney?
I'm in San Francisco. She's in LA, so she can go to Disneyland. Wait, Tara, are you going to Disneyland? Maybe we need to make a video of you eating the.
I mean, I have an annual pass. I go all the time.
Can you go? Can you go? Okay, great.
I'm going on Saturday.
Oh, great. Can you film yourself and doing the Monte Cristo so we can put it on the Instagram?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, okay. So, Scott, what do you think? Scott, what does Scott think about the fact that Luke kind of did what Nicole wanted, added salads and did new menus? What does Scott think of that?
I think that I think so the seeds of doom have been planted. because Lorelai's level of ridicule is the bellwether for his life, isn't it? Right?
Oh my god. I so agree. It's like, no, he's adding salads. They'll be over. So
it's
going
to be over. That's what I thought too. It's,
this because is Luke doesn't, even though he's doing it, he's probably doing it to be sweet. He really likes her.
Right.
No. Lorelai would never, ever, ever make Luke add salads to the menu.
And that's why he got so irritated. Because he knows he's in the wrong relationship. It wasn't a conversation about the menu. It was a conversation about you're with the wrong girl.
Right.
I'm the right girl. All subconscious, right? All subliminal.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Right. Like I would basically she's saying I wouldn't try to change you.
Right. Exactly.
So you know what I loved about that scene? Mm. The subtlety. They get the menus. This looks different. Like so subtle. And then you're like,
it's like, are we at Luke's? What's happening here? You know?
And then she's like, but I had all my doodles. And then Luke says, these new menus, the plastic is to discourage the doodling. I mean, to me, I thought it was like, I loved the whole scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was
oh,
great.
And then, oh my God, what is the part where they say girlfriend and you say no? Nicole is the woman I am dating. Right. That's it. Which is like also just telling me this woman is going to be gone.
Yeah, she's going to be gone soon. That's for sure. Yeah, she's having an undue influence on Luke and Lorelai has to leap into action and make sure she rights the ship.
Yes,
really, I don't know if it's so much born of her wanting to be with him. It's just really like her world is built around these things.
Right. Like,
and they
don't
can't
try to change Luke. This is not happening.
No. Right.
You know what I think is kind of interesting? So, you know what? In-N-Out, there's like secret menu items. Why weren't the salads just, why can't Nicole just order the salad? Like, did it have to be on the menu?
Because you know, I don't know. She's an attorney. Maybe she just wants to take over. She's looking at Luke, and she's beginning. Like maybe his clothes will change too. He'll dress differently now. You know what I mean? Maybe she's suggesting, why do you wear the hat all the time? You know. Now, if that came off, I mean, all hell would break loose.
It's just over.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes. I guess identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, How'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we now go from Luke's Diner to Chilton.
God, now I'm really hungry. What happened?
So we learn there's a new teacher, which I didn't know. I didn't recognize that teacher.
Yeah, me either.
And then we learn that there is the Chilton Bicentennial Celebration and there's the speech competition. Right. Brad Langford has returned. Who got the hickey?
That was Louise.
Okay.
No, that was, it's Louise and what are their names?
Madeline.
Madeline. I think it was Louise.
Louise got the hickey. Yeah.
And we learned that the winner of the speech sort of competition will be on C-SPAN, which I love, like C-SPAN. I'm jumping ahead, but I love Richard's love of the vote in the, like, literally he's all, oh, it's fascinating. So Paris is in rare form, just being so vile.
She's
to
on
Brad.
One.
But it was fun. It was fun.
But I also, I also was wondering, like, how did Brad finish school while on Broadway?
Like, maybe he was just doing
homeschool.
Yeah, he was doing a theater school. What's that called? TV school, theater school.
Yeah, they have those. And in New York, they're really good. And I'm sure they're good everywhere, but in New York, they're a really good one. Yeah.
And I do think there was an inside joke there because I actually think he went to do Into the Woods.
Oh,
if
really?
I remember.
Yeah, it was Into the Woods. Yeah.
But Brad Langford went to do Into the Woods, but so did the actor. I remember correctly.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, we had him on, didn't we?
And yeah,
we asked him about that. Yeah,
he did. So,
and it was Amy's opportunity to express her love of musical theater, which she has a great love for. Yeah,
my favorite line was, "Do you need a 5, 6, 7, 8?
Get out of my way, Rita Moreno." Or no, what did he say? Cheetah Rivera. Out of my way, Cheetah Rivera.
So good. So that sort of sets up. That was a great scene that just sort of sets up like, okay, we're going to have this competition. This is a major thing in this episode.
And now, and it's like also Paris is back. Have we seen her? Paris is back.
We've seen her, but not at her in her like mean elements. But
right. Now she's like full guns again, the way she was when we first met
her. And we see that she's still feuding with Rory, which we sort of needed to be reminded they have clearly not made up, which makes the sort of moment that we'll get to.
She's like the Muhammad Ali of private school girls versus the Joe Frazier of private school girls in Rory, where Muhammad Ali's talking all the smack and then he gets in the ring and gets knocked out by Joe Frazier.
I love the boxing reference that most of us did not get, but...
nobody's heard of Muhammad Ali, right?
No, that one
I knew.
I'm assuming Muhammad Ali was the like a butterfly, sting like a bee guy, whatever. And then was Joe Frazier quiet, subtle, nice, you don't think he's going to have bark to his bite kind of a thing? I don't think I got any of those phrases right.
Ali verbally abused and humiliated Joe Frazier during the marketing campaign for the fight.
And Ali
was big at promotion.
Okay.
And Joe took it very personally, you know,
and Joe won
and Joe knocked him out. Yeah.
Also, sorry for the interrupting. I see you Instagram. I'm working on it. I just get excited. Okay. So then we go to the inn and Suki is in the kitchen and we immediately know something is wrong.
The food tastes bad. That's not like Suki.
No, and it tastes like sewage. And the whole kitchen staff knows. I thought the background acting there was very good.
It was very musical theater when Rory came in and wanted to eat something and they go like, all together. They go, no, that was like being on Broadway. That was a Broadway shtick.
Right. That whole scene was so choreographed too, because she thinks the food is fine. And you immediately know the whole kitchen staff knows the food is not fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just all amusing. And
happening. It was a really great reveal for her pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I thought that scene was remarkably heartwarming and fun and just happy. And what a great way. I mean, she just comes running out, I'm pregnant.
And Lorelai knew because I assume Lorelai was looking at the calendar or something.
I love the sudden realization of like, oh my God. And also just like food tasting different and stuff like that. I don't know if she was looking at the calendar.
Lorelai was looking at the calendar. She went to the computer, right? And she's doing something, which it looked like a new computer, by the way. Did anyone else think they've kind of upgraded their technology there at the Independence?
Yeah, maybe they did. Yeah,
so she's the whole thing. There's so much movement in that scene because think about it. We start in the kitchen.
Right.
We've got the plates out, which I actually thought the plates didn't look as beautiful of a presentation as I would expect. But anyway,
the food looked good.
It did, but it didn't look plated as I would assume Suki insists that the food be plated, but whatever.
I don't know. I thought it looked pretty delicious.
That's my only bone to pick. Oh, we forgot to start with our bones to pick because we have barely any, but that would be my one.
We're out of the boneyard on this episode. There's no bones.
Exactly.
There's
no bones. Exactly. No. So then we go. So then Rory bebops in and she's sort of explaining her situation versus Paris with the speech. And we're learning about that while we're doing this dance in the kitchen with the plates and the no. Then we go out to the front desk. Mm-hmm. I swear Lorelai went in her purse and did she get candy? And
it was like a chocolate bar and she handed it to Rory and she ate it the whole time.
She gave her a Tic Tac or a Twix bar. Kit Kat.
Looked like a Kit Kat or a Reese's peanut butter.
Yeah, she promised her a Kit Kat.
So she, and all the movement. So she's in the purse, she grabs it, she hands the candy. Rory's eating the candy, still telling the story about the speech while we're simultaneously in the back of our minds thinking about
Suki.
Why does the food taste gross? I mean, there was so much happening. It was like you could be spinning. And then she goes to the computer. Oh my God, I'm pregnant. Suki comes out pregnant. I mean, the whole scene was just like,
but that's why it's great. There's so much going on. There's all these narratives running around, and it's the audience is a little bit behind the story, which they need to be. If we get out in front of it, we're bored. If we're behind it. So Amy is just like loading on stuff and great lines. And we just like, we're on the edge of our seat. Like what's next? What's next? And I caught something, and I don't think it was a real deep personal insult against her mother. But she said something very funny to her mother.
So Rory says something to Lorelai.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. I need to watch the scene like three more times because there's so much happening.
All right, you couldn't
retain it. So tell me what happened.
So Rory said, you know, she admitted to her mother that she wanted to win this competition because she wanted to give the speech on C-SPAN. Right. Mm-hmm. So she said, I really want to do that, Mom. I really want to beat Paris, and I want to run around in circles and said, I win.
Yes.
And Lorelai says, well, that's great. You're becoming more like me now. Isn't that good? She goes, yeah, I know. It's kind of creepy and petty, but you know, da, da, da. And I'm like, wow, is that a backhanded slap? But Lorelai didn't take it that way. And I'm sure it wasn't intended that way.
It's a hint of a dig.
I would have never, unless you said that, I probably wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, I noticed.
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't want to make a big thing of it, you know?
Yeah.
No, but it's a little, it's funny. It's funny, like a little bit of a dig.
Right.
A dig, a compliment dig. It's sort of like, is that a backhanded compliment? You know what they say? Like,
And it's like their relationship is so solid and so tight that she could just sort of throw it off the cuff. They know it's a joke, right?
But it's sort of like when someone says like, oh, you look good. Have you lost weight? And then you're like, wait, thanks. Doesn't it remind you of that?
Yeah, no, I just had that conversation with someone because like I usually don't wear like a lot of makeup on these Zooms. And someone was like, wow, you look great. And I put like mascara on and like eyeliner. And I'm like, yeah, I actually tried. Yeah.
Right, so you're like, did I look really?
Yeah, did I look bad the other day?
Right,
but these are the kinds of comments that can end relationships. I mean, you know what I mean. If you're not so close with a person, they'll take it the wrong way.
Some people,
and it's like, what the hell? Yeah. Anyway, I think we've.
It's the ultimate sort of compliment, but not like. Okay, so great scene, and then so now we've got another humongous plot. Something, whatever you call it, thing, because now Suki's pregnant. So it's like, oh my God, we're waiting for the college acceptances. Mm-hmm. Now we've got this sort of secondary storyline of this speech. Suki's pregnant. It's like, oh my Lord.
Yeah, a lot happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now the kids at Chilton are all kind of getting ready to do their audition speeches, I guess. I don't know what you'd call it. Like they're doing their tryout speeches, and Paris is just intimidating the whole line, just going down the line.
It was one after another.
All right. So I want to tell you a story. And this is a common technique adopted by people who are, I don't know if I want to say insecure, just people that want to psych out a room. And I did this one time in an audition. And there was an extremely beautiful woman there at this one audition. And there was a lot of guys in the room. And I actually knew this girl and I knew her boyfriend. So I told her, I said, listen, don't you know, like recognize me and I won't recognize you. But I want, let's do something to the room. Because there were a lot of girls. There are a lot of guys auditioning. It was a big part. It was like in the mid to late 90s. And I said, every single guy in this room is staring at you. Okay. They all want to ask you out. I said, why don't I just come up to you, start chatting you up? That'll start getting into their heads, right? It will. And then I will take you outside and we will run lines. So we'll help each other with the audition because I want to run lines and I'm sure you want to run lines.
Oh my God.
Because the part was to be opposite each other as a boyfriend and girlfriend. And it'll freak all these guys out. It'll give you the edge. It'll give really me a bigger edge when I get in the room, because I'll be the Wait. Cool guy. Oh, I'll be the cool God. Guy that, like, you know, right?
Did this work?
I did get the part, yes.
Oh, and so she said, yes, let's do it.
She said, let's do it. So we went outside, and they could see us because it was these windows, ceiling to floor windows, and they had the shades weren't drawn. So they saw us out there laughing and talking. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. And they got tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And Wait. I walked in loose and prepared and got the offer. Yeah.
You know what's so funny? It's the first time. I mean, I think I've probably thought about this before, but like,
mind as
a, when you're an yes, acting is not just about the skill, but you're also like up against these other people. Oh, yeah.
And they're all good actors too. They're
it's
all
sort
good.
Of cutthroat.
Oh yeah, it is. Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
The pressure in those waiting rooms reminds me of like the doctor's office waiting room.
You know, that's why
everybody's like, am I dying?
Oh. Right. That's how I went into Gilmore too. Loosey goosey and loud.
And how did you do that one?
Same. I didn't do mind games so much in that one, but I walked in the room and I was just sort of like free and loud and how you doing? What's happening?
And is it better to go in not caring if you get it or not? I mean, if you can mentally do that.
Yeah. That's best. Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a good idea if you know you're not going to get it. Don't care if you're going to get it, but you're prepared.
Yeah. Wait. So you don't audition anymore? Did you audition for this job you have now? No.
Oh no. It was a phone call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When's the last audition you went on?
Geez. Well, they do them on tape now. So I put an audition on tape for Natalie Portman to play opposite her in this series she's doing.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Or to be not her love interest, but her to be her maybe her boss.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I putting myself on tape. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. Oh, that's a whole different world. Yeah.
I don't want to get a picture taken. It's like, oh, so bad. Okay. All right. So we digress. But great story.
Paris has got some
game. She's using your same.
She's
same
got some
method.
Game. She's got some game.
And I love Rory kind of go like again. Rory's it's like good cop, bad cop or something like.
Yeah.
Paris is so unhinged, and Rory's like, go get him, Brad. You'll do great. And like, don't listen to her. And like, and then trying to go up against Paris, and it's just they make for great rivals.
But I think that Rory said less, but had more impact and actually won that little tête-à-tête.
I agree. I totally agree.
Because she was on the side of right.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we need this because of what we're coming to.
I never went into rooms and tried to bring anybody down.
You weren't like going up to somebody and being like, you suck, man.
Yeah, man. Hey, well, you're not going to remember those lines. Jeez, that's a big paragraph. Did you have trouble like I did? Huh?
But
don't you hate it when you get tense in the room and you just freeze up? I hate that.
I think
Let that happen to you, buddy.
The scene that we're getting at the towards the end of the episode is so much more significant because of these scenes leading up to it. Okay, so
absolutely.
We get Lorelai on the phone with Suki, and they're Lorelai's asking, "How did it go when you told Jackson?" And we learn that Jackson is completely freaking out, losing his mind.
Yep.
Which I actually found sweet. Do you know what I mean?
Like the oh boy.
I think a lot of dads go through this. I know that.
Did you?
But I didn't start baby-proofing the house until
throwing away knives.
Yeah, I mean, I did it pretty quick.
Wait, did you? Did you actually like freak out and start buying things for plugs and?
Oh sure. Well, I didn't freak out. I just, we just bought what we needed to get the plastic things and the plugs, and there were a lot of plugs in that house.
Did you baby-proof?
Bags full of them.
Those things are so annoying. I cannot get them out.
I mean, like, we have plugs in the floor too. I mean, they're all in the living room.
We have those plug things all over one of our houses, and it's like I can't get them out. Did you baby proof before the baby was born?
No, when he started walking.
Yeah,
We had the plugs, of course. But he was, you know, he was in a crib for a year or whatever.
Did you know all those things where you can't open a drawer? You know those things, so like they baby-proof the drawers and then adults cannot open the drawer?
No, but we had the, we tried the really subtle ones that go inside the drawers and they really work. And they can be a pain in the ass. Then we ripped those out. So this, we can't even figure out
how to open them. That's how I was.
So we got the big plastic, ugly white ones that actually work. It looks like a bike lock. So we had them all over the kitchen, all over.
My brother has baby gates everywhere. Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, you have to.
I just have to climb over them because I cannot open the baby gates.
No, it's easy to climb over.
I fully leg over. Easier.
But like, in the old house, we had this big sunken living room where you step down into a couple steps.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But those steps had corners. They didn't go across the whole way. So there were like sharp edges on those steps.
Oh, no.
So I would get the pillows that were on the couch that I didn't think were particularly attractive in the first place. They were my wife's choice. And I would cover those edges up all over the living room because it was on the dining room side and the hallway on the foyer side. And I'd put the pillows there. So if he ever fell, he'd fall on the pillow.
Smart and crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's what you do. You anticipate, as a father, you anticipate and protect.
You don't wait
for the bad thing to happen. You play all the bad things out in your mind, every possible scenario, you just clear everything out.
It is funny, though, what people do for the first kid. And then by the third kid, hanging up. It's fine. My sister-in-law was really like, no TV, no sugar, none of that for the first kid. And then a little bit on the second. By the time my niece Roxy was born, it was like, here's an iPad, here's a cupcake, see you later. Yeah. Like, you're good. Exactly. Wait, Tara, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I love how Jackson's thinking about this and like hasn't even comprehended that like a baby, he wanted, what was it, 5 and 5? Is that what it was?
Oh, 4 and 4.
4 and 4. And he's like, because I'm thinking like we're jumping ahead a little bit, but like the knife thing, it's like that you have years until the kid's climbing to like to get on the kitchen counter. Cleaver.
Oh, you'd be surprised how they can climb pretty quick. Yeah, it's surprising. Yeah.
Boys are nuts. Like they are on top of the couch upside down.
Yes, they are.
Real fast.
Yeah. Nick was like Spider-Man. It was unbelievable. She was on the ceiling once. I was like, how'd you get up there?
It's so true. Okay, so now we have sort of we'll talk about it because she has to go to Dosey's to look for the allergy medicine for it to not be there, I suppose, so that we have a reason for her to go in the CVS at Hartford or whatever, whichever she was at. Mm-hmm. But it was still a funny scene with Dean and Kirk, and Kirk's on the ground with the mail. And it was sort of just a mess, but it was sort of a nothing scene.
It was kind of random because I was like, who needed the medication?
She did. She had allergies.
It was just so random. Yeah.
It was just like a plot device.
Don't you flog my flawless episode. There was nothing wrong with it.
Sorry.
That's
Sorry.
My Silence. Bone to pick. That's my bone to pick.
No, that's not a bone. That's not a bone. Small,
it's a, that's oh, a tiny no. little.
Are we? Are
a
we
little
accepting,
bone that's in a salmon. You know when you were in a salmon?
I don't know
you
that we're accepting
like,
any bones today.
Two tiny little bones.
Are we accepting
so
bones?
She bumps right into Max.
I forgot this
drugstore
happens.
In Hartford. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it was like CVS. We'll just call it CVS.
Yeah.
Right.
And Max. And I thought, what'd you guys think?
I forgot this even happens. Like, the second I saw him, I'm like, oh my God, that's right. He comes back. Like, I forgot. So it was kind of a nice surprise for me, but I think Max will always, I don't know, he has like, out of all the, besides Luke, out of all the random boyfriends, like he was my favorite.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I liked him coming back and I love Scott Cohen and I think he's terrific. He got the whammy and he got out of there and he's over it. You could tell he was over it. You could tell she wasn't over it.
Terrific, she wasn't over it.
Terrific
right?
acting job on her part because she really did what she really was glowing that whole scene and just kind of smiling at him. And she was flush. You
cute
could,
in this whole episode. Lorelai was so pretty in the whole episode.
See, that's the subtlety of what the really strong actors do is what she was doing in that scene. She was really happy to see him. And you could tell physically, you could tell.
And when he left, she didn't want him to go.
Right.
Yeah. When he's like, okay, like, good to see you. And she was like, you could tell she wanted 10 more hours. Very funny when he says he was in California and she's all cowabunga, dude.
Yeah.
And then the jokes about Stanford. I just thought, okay, this is so good.
Yeah. I just, at that point, he was over all the, you know, the stand-up comedian that she is. It's like, oh God, here we go again. You know, she was using that to reel him back in, you know. He wasn't going for it. That's
although,
it. He's over it.
Not really. Mm-hmm. Apparently not, as he says. Apparently not.
You know?
So we'll get to that.
She's powerful, right?
We go to Friday night dinner, which I thought was hilarious because it's so Richard. You're right. It is interesting. There is no Emily in this episode. And Friday night dinner is much lighter. Much funnier.
He
much
just
more.
Like didn't know like what like the phone was ringing and he's like, oh right, I have to answer the phone.
Oh my God, Lorelai prank calling from the phone.
But wait a minute, her line when he opened the door, she goes, boy, mom's getting what are you saying?
Was it about the help, the maid?
Yeah, they're certainly looking. What?
Oh yes.
She said,
God.
What is she saying? It was great. Let's see if our crack staff can come up with a line.
Can remember. I do not remember because I was so
that was a laugh
so
out
distraught
loud,
over all the strokes, the strokes in the DAR.
But they made it funny. Amy made it really funny with the strokes and the strokes on top of strokes, and people calling to remind us that they had strokes. And I already know they had strokes.
And then Rory, one of them says to each other, Rory or Lorelai, did you hear the strokes? Oh my God.
Everybody
had a stroke. It's so bad. And then Lorelai's just dying to tell Rory that she just bumped into Max.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so funny when Rory says, yeah, he was on loan somewhere. Right. He was on loan somewhere. That whole everything about it was awesome.
Because
that's where we get the C-SPAN line too, where Richard's like, oh, I love a televised house vote.
I also liked how he asked if the school can change, the time.
Right. Wait a minute.
Rory, Alexis's acting is so perfect. Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I love the ease and the joy with which Ed Herman was acting in that scene. You know, going over to get the drink and then sitting down and just, you know, he was such a wonderful actor. He really was.
Like, yeah, tell me about that. Like, he makes it look like he's not acting or working.
Right. Everything is, there's no sharp edges to it. It's all very smooth and it flows and he's, you know, he's so alive and present and just enjoying what he's doing. I mean, and you believe everything. I mean, even to the point where he stopped and turned around and listened to her. And then he realized he had to go answer the phone. I mean, it all has the quality of what Stanislavski used to call the quality of the first time.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
like, it all seems very spontaneous when he's doing it.
Yes.
And like when everybody's doing it. But Ed Herman was such a wonderful actor. And I know I was hard on him last week. It wasn't him, the actor.
No,
it was the situations that he was placed in. You're only as good as your writing. Okay.
Except you're just criticizing the fact that the Richard we know would have stood up for Emily and would have stood up to Trix.
Don't
but
get
that's
it.
Why I find that. I find that. You go.
No. I do not we'll get that part of his character. You know, I don't
get
it.
What I find so fascinating is that Richard would only be that way with his mother, meaning he would stand up to anybody at work, at wherever, but his mother has power over him. And I find that to be very believable.
But Trix has no redeeming qualities. Where are her redeeming qualities?
I think she has them. We have not seen them.
She has no empathy. And people that have no empathy, you know what we call them?
Narcissists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even worse. A narcissist can empathize.
Sociopath, right.
A narcissist can have some empathy, but a sociopath and a psychopath cannot.
So. I think... I think that is an interesting debate. If there is anything likable about Bran Trix, I think that we will. I think there's more to it there. I don't think she's full villain.
I think that Richard Trix dynamic, I think, hurts his character. You can't hurt her character any more than she already is. I mean, she's in a fixed state of bad. But but Richard's character, how he bounces off of her, I think it hurts his character. That's what I was objecting to.
Totally fair. But there's an element of him that's a bit of a mama's boy, and I'm okay with that. It's not like I don't love it. I don't admire it. It's not, but it makes sense to me.
It goes against everything that he is about. It goes against everything that
I think that's where we disagree. I think that's the part where we disagree, because I think,
I don't find it an interesting character quirk. It's there's something larger at play that I don't like about.
Well,
I love him. I love him most of the time. His acting is just off the charts. Right. Great.
It's the writing you are criticizing, but we'll continue this debate because Trix is not going away.
Yeah.
So we've got more of that. So quickly, we have the scene on the porch with Lorelai and Suki. Quick, brief scene, but we're realizing, okay, like Jackson is a good guy. He's just trying to.
Yeah. Was there ever any doubt?
No. And even though he didn't get excited and Suki didn't have her moment with him of just being so happy, what we're realizing is like, this guy is taking this seriously.
Yeah. Wouldn't drive more than 7 miles per hour. It took 2 hours to get home from the doctor's.
Exactly.
That's a funny joke in and of itself. It's very dangerous in real life to drive 7 miles.
No, true. And that scene where they're in the bed and sort of Jackson comes around, you really appreciate their relationship and the whole thing. And that was a great, they're important characters in this show. Really important.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, yeah, I thought the way that all played out, I thought was great. So, okay. So now we get the three-way phone call, which is hilarious, that this assistant is calling Rory and Paris with Headmaster Charleston to let them know that he's changed the rules and they are going to do the speech together.
Yep.
I like how they're silent with each other when they were waiting to connect. Like they just both didn't say a word.
And they're so polite to Headmaster Charleston, even though they're like,
also, why is he calling at night?
I don't know. And on like a Friday night? Was it like a Friday night? Right. Like it seemed like it was 9 o'clock.
To probably give them the most possible time to begin working on a combined speech.
And what's that guy still doing at school at 9 o'clock on a Friday night? Maybe it's because, like 6
what,
o'clock.
What? You think being a headmaster at a fancy private school's easy hours? Come on.
True.
All those calls to the Ivy League institutions talking about this student, that student, my God.
So Paris and Rory talk and they're going to do the speech over the phone and suddenly knock, knock, knock. Paris is at the door. And we learn she has slept with Jamie.
You know, that scene scared me because she is so disconnected from her own feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just kind of chilling, actually, when she, you know, I slept with Jamie and I don't know how I should feel about it. And I'm numb. Mm-hmm. And how, Rory, I want to tell you about this. And how should I feel about this?
But I feel like that's a conversation that like teenage girls have. Like you go to your friend, you need to confide in your friend. I thought it was pretty spot on, actually.
I thought that it was very spot on. But Scott is right that Paris is unhinged essentially all the time. Like this happened. And she's really trying to figure out how she feels about it. Like she doesn't
This is what human beings do. But it happened to me and I don't know how to feel about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We did have one of the best lines though. So so obviously Rory and Paris are on the phone and then Paris comes to the door and tells her she slept with Jamie and Rory says, was it something I said?
Yeah.
Okay. So then we have this scene is so important because we obviously knew she didn't sleep with Dean. She didn't sleep with Jess, even though we had our like, weird.
No, no, you guys put a little bit of doubt.
It was Danielle's first time watching too. Yeah. So,
and I had a weird moment, but and then Lorelai listening in and being so terrified and then so ecstatic.
And she raised her daughter right.
I got the good kid.
And do you know what actors hate the most is when they have to do those lines at the end of scenes? Like,
oh really?
I have a great kid. You look at that and you go, oh no. I have to say that and I have to make that work. That's the hardest job have is to sell that line.
She sold it beautifully. Oh my God.
She sold it beautifully. And it's the hardest thing to do.
I feel myself right now getting emotional. Mm-hmm. I was so emotional watching it. I don't know why. Right from this moment till the end of the episode. I believe because Liza played that plays Paris so well.
No, there's another reason. Can I expound?
Yes, please.
Here's what I think it is, and this is what it is for me. This is the experience I'm having with this show. Paris hasn't been around in a while, and I've been super critical of her, right? Mm-hmm. As a character, not as an actress.
Of course.
As a character. I missed her. Mm-hmm. She came back, and I was like, ah, all is right in the world, in the Gilmore world, because she's back, and she's you know, full Monty insulting everybody and being funny about it. These characters grow on us. Mm-hmm. They become our friends. Hence this level of addiction, because mm-hmm. these characters are so extreme and so unpredictable and so smart and so driven mm-hmm. and so maybe so much like people we know, while at the same time being so unlike anybody we've ever met. And that's hard to balance. And they do it so beautifully on the show with these characters, because they're all very reminiscent of people that we sort of know and have run into, but they're nothing like anybody we know at the same time. So I missed them. I missed Richard. I missed the old Richard. Yeah. I missed that ebullient Richard. I missed Paris. I love seeing Paris rehabilitate herself. Mm-hmm. And as chilling as I thought that scene was, I love that she opened up to Rory, and I love the breakdown scene, all that stuff. I love these people. These are my friends now.
And I think you're nailing it. Because
even Max. I was like, oh, Max is back. Great.
I think you're saying that, I think mm-hmm. you're so spot on. I missed Paris and Rory getting along.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to I know I always cry, but it's like that scene was so unbelievable mm-hmm. and so beautiful.
Right.
I missed them. I like their sort of always going head to head, but I missed those moments because they were really becoming friends. Mm-hmm. Dare I say they are, in a sense, they're not Lane and Rory, but they are best friends in a way.
Yeah. School, and they're so, best school friends.
It was, that scene just gutted me.
Keep going.
No, I want to hear what you say. You go.
No, it reminds me of a quote from one of the great directors or a couple of different great directors of all time. And they were talking about what a great script is or what a great movie is. And, you know, they simplify it down to, you know what a great film is or great television. You know what it is? It's a couple of moments between two people. Mm-hmm. That's it. And the rest of it is not important. It's important how they get there. And boy, did they, circuitous route it was to get to that moment. And the two and a half seasons. What are we in season three now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two and three quarter seasons to get there. But we got there, and how beautifully we got there. That was a real moment between two people.
Even though I don't think that Paris mm-hmm. would have been so disheveled on television and in front of the school. I do think her reaction to not getting into Harvard and having slept with her she's in high school, he's in college, having slept with this guy, that part, I think that would send mm-hmm. anyone, especially Paris, just spiraling.
Yeah.
Like her saying, I had sex, which is the most shocking thing ever, and I didn't get into Harvard. No one would have ever thought that would be the what happened.
Yeah. I have a bone to pick.
Tell us.
First bone. Sorry.
It's okay. There can always be a bone.
Okay. Here's a potential bone, and you guys can talk me out of the boneyard after I pick this bone. Would have the headmaster or even Richard or anybody who saw 100%. Paris in that state allowed her to go up on stage?
I totally agree with you. I think Rory would have said, you look a mess. What is going on? They all just let her.
Right.
That would have never happened. No. Ever. I also think Paris, the Paris we know, would not have done
it. To begin with, she would have never been late. Like, it just started from that.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then you would think that, you know, let's say she did storm the stage and get up on there. They wouldn't let her continue for as long as she was sitting there. It would have been all right, let's pause. Let's get her off stage.
And I thought Lorelai, there was a moment where I thought, oh, Lorelai's going to go up and not, you know, Lorelai would go up and get her. Mm-hmm. And then Rory would give the speech. The way it transpired was I loved. But yes, I think it's a fair bone to pick because that no one's no.
But
at a school like Chilton,
right, exactly.
She wasn't even dressed.
Exactly. Tara made a great point. Say
it
that again.
It made for great TV.
Yeah.
It was really a moment did. Where it you really did. Honestly, yeah. like between, you know, her saying she slept with Jamie and then her getting rejected all within two scenes of each other was like, mm-hmm. damn, you feel for her. You now feel what she's feeling and mm-hmm. like her showing up in those sweats and that sweater, which by the way, I left her turtleneck. She wore two of them this episode.
Right.
you know, you just feel for her. And I think that we're always so team Rory. And now you're kind of feeling what Paris is going through.
Well, yeah. And as soon as you see Paris walking down the hall, you go, uh-oh, what the hell happened?
What happened?
So I started, and that's good television. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden you're fearful of like what it could have been.
Yes.
You know what I thought? I thought that Jamie guy had
dumped
done
something.
Either dumped her or had done something horrible to her.
I thought so too.
And it was like, oh God, she needs either medical attention or she needs to go talk to a psychologist or, you know, she's in bad shape right away. And so, you know, you're thinking as an audience, like what is going to happen here? So the anticipation was huge.
Yes.
Right?
I so agree with you. You're like going. So normally when we watch, right, I take my notes and I'm always doing this. I sat back. I don't remember what I was eating, but I sat back in bed, put my legal pad to the side and just watched and was like nervous, anxious, edge of my seat. Like what is happening?
It also just shows you like going back to that they're actually really friends. It's not like Rory and Lane, but they're friends. Right. But when Rory, you know, pulls her off stage and she kind of like talks to her like, you know, like Paris, like, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, that just shows their friendship and like Paris, I'm sorry, Rory can have two best friends and Paris is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
This, right, they were like, I don't want to say sisters, but they were like sisters in moment.
Yeah.
Because she, and it was like, in that particular case, Rory had it. Rory's got her, you know, Rory's handling it with the speech. Rory's the together one. And then, you know, she just grabs her and like takes her. And you don't get a minute of Rory's not mad at her.
No,
Rory's not disappointed that the speech went haywire.
She's concerned for her friend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and it was on top of all of the anticipation and the tension that created, it was also very funny.
Totally.
She was very funny. And so we got some big laughs out of it. But here's the thing. I think, I think Rory, because the Rory Paris friendship is odd, to say the least. And it seems like it's so unlikely and so opposite ends of the spectrum. I don't think so. I think they're both outsiders in their own way. Obviously, Rory's an outsider because she stars Hollow and, you know, she's got the mom that she does. Paris is more on inside baseball with that crowd, but in that crowd, she's not accepted, is she?
Right.
She's feared. Mm-hmm. She has a reputation as being, you know, obsessive compulsive and studies all the time, but does she have friends?
She's not cool or popular at all.
But everyone knows her.
Everybody, right. Yeah. She's notorious.
Yeah.
Right? So she's an outsider in her own way. So I think that's what makes those two come together.
I so agree with you. And they both are at the top of their game because arguably they both are the smartest. They both are the president and the vice president. They both got picked to do the speech. They both are the top.
Yeah.
They're just going about it so differently.
Mm-hmm. Can I share with you my all-time favorite Richard Gilmore moment?
Yes.
It came in this scene. Because when she was in the middle of her meltdown up there, They cut to Richard and he was doing this. Ready? He's just doing this. He was like this. He went. He looked, his eyes were closed. His head was turned.
Asleep.
No, he was not asleep. He was like, I don't want to be here. This is horrible.
Oh my God. Wait.
Oh no. It was hysterical.
Wait.
It was the best choice I've seen an actor make in a situation like that. That, see, the genius is in the choice. He wasn't asleep.
I thought he was asleep too.
No, he wasn't asleep.
Oh my God, Scott, I think you might be wrong because I am convinced he's asleep.
You think he was asleep?
Yeah.
Which is why he has no idea what happened because there's a moment later.
Oh, he didn't know what happened?
Uh-uh. No, there's a moment later.
Oh, I thought he was grimacing. Like, oh God, this is stupid.
I think he was sound asleep because there's a moment later when he says to Lorelai, okay, that was great.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Why was she asleep?
I think he got bored.
And
it just started. How's he bored?
He's working so much.
Yeah, but it was just Rory until Paris showed up.
But she just said a couple of lines. He was all excited to be there. Wait a minute, hang on.
I think because he's been working so late with the calls to Japan or whatever.
He's been taking care of the house.
And taking care of the house. So it is my bone to pick, though.
That's a bone. I think we got a bone.
I had a bone to pick with this because
Fall asleep.
Right. Richard would have never fallen asleep. No, he wouldn't have fallen asleep. I agree. It's my second or third.
He was all excited and energized. And they sat down. She only said a couple of lines of speech. And he would have been.
I don't know.
He would have been alerted that Paris was in some kind of trouble. He's seeing this girl up there.
The whole thing was crazy. I think they did it. This is my gut. And everybody can debate this. I think they did it as comedic relief.
Probably.
Because they didn't need it.
So intense. I totally agree. I thought it's a bone to pick for me. Richard Gilmore would have never fallen asleep at that thing.
No.
And Richard Gilmore would have never been clueless. He would have never said to Lorelai, well, that was a great event, great speech. Mm-hmm. And Lorelai just goes along with it. It's like, no, he would have totally had wise words or face is saying it all because I thought it was weird.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. This episode still goes in the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
It's still in my mind flawless.
Look,
I'm gonna go to my grave thinking Richard was not asleep and that he was just grimacing.
I am fine with having a few flaws even in a perfect episode. Okay, so we have a few more things before we get to the end of this. The joke the coat lady said was epic.
He was asleep.
She's like, there's coats in there. Otherwise, the staircase to the roof is on the right. And and they let it hang. You know what I mean? Like they gave us that moment. And then Lorelai says, oh my God, 200 years. And someone finally cracked a joke. Right. Like, I thought that was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I have one more little bone to pick with Max.
Uh-oh.
I will tell you.
This is a third bone.
Yeah, I think I've had three. And Tara had one.
I had one. Yeah.
Really?
I didn't love the line. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys can tell me I'm wrong. And maybe I'm being too like 2022 about it.
When I was a kid, we used to say, go ahead.
Yeah. I didn't love the line when he said, oh, it's hard to be a girl.
Who said that? Max.
He said,
yeah.
When did he say that?
When they're in the coat room and
he said, it's
just
hard
about
to be a girl.
Right before they kiss, he says, because they're talking about what Rory and Paris are going through and all the things. You know, obviously that was a moment. I just thought, it's not about being a girl, Max. But I don't know. I might be being too, you know, whatever. I can let it slide completely, but I did write, I don't love that line. I loved the kiss, though.
I mean, I was there for it.
Do you feel, Scott, about the kiss?
Well, that explains it.
I think you gotta keep that thing going. You gotta somehow, you know, you gotta keep it going. I think that it's hard. Poor Max. I mean, he didn't have a chance.
Yeah,
I mean, she's so attractive and wonderful. And obviously he could tell that she was that he had psychological advantage at this point between the two of them. Right. I mean, she was eaten out of his hand. She was filled with regret. She was filled with she was still physically turned on by him.
Yeah. Right. Because she talks about you look great. You look great. Yeah, you look great. You look great.
Right. Where to me, it looked like he'd lost weight from the prior episodes and didn't look as great, but he looked pretty much the same and still great. I think it's hard to resist that, right? How do you resist that?
Right. He never was over it.
No.
No, and I think him coming in, we kind of knew something was going to happen. At least, you know.
Yeah. Like, and
you had to.
I know I bring this up every episode, and I hope no one gets annoyed. We always have this amazing scene, this huge crescendo. And then you take a breath and you think, okay,
it's done.
It's over. The episode's ending. Nope. Rory got the big envelope.
Yeah.
Three of them. Mm-hmm. And that scene was like, oh my God.
That was
done so well. Like, because it wasn't like this, oh my God, look, like, you know, you run in with, like, you know, from the mail in the house. Like, it was just so heartwarming.
Yes.
Because they were at the mailbox together and they didn't see one, but they saw three.
Right.
Yeah. And you realize, and I think Lorelai even says, everything you've worked for is now coming true.
Yeah.
And here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, whoa. That's when I just went, wow, this episode just did me in. It was so good.
Yeah, it was so good.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation,
I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let me ask you a few questions from our notes.
Go ahead.
So for everyone listening, we obviously, we put work into this. So we obviously plan things ahead. So Scott had a few notes and I really want to share that with you guys. So my first question is, we talked about how Lorelai feels about Richard showing up for Rory. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I think she's, it's more proof positive that she's such a mature woman. And that she's accepted that she's not going to get much out of her parents. So in return, why should she put so much in? But when it comes to her daughter, she does. She's a woman enough to a big enough person to appreciate the fact that Richard shows up and that Emily's going to show up. And she's truly grateful for that and knows that it's good for her daughter.
She's
no longer playing that, hey, what about me card. You know, why weren't you there for me?
Correct.
So it seems like she's moved on from it. And it's nice to see.
And I always love how Richard has a check because my grandpa did that.
Yeah.
So at my every single thing. Just like that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So then you were going to tell us about the camera work during the Paris meltdown crying scene.
The crying scene. Yeah. These are very difficult scenes. And those were obviously real tears and a stunningly deep performance from Liza. Really heartbreaking and really dead on and true. And here's another thing, and I'm going to say it again. I think there were a lot of reasons to nominate lead actors, guest actors, series regulars and recurring players. And that everybody got overlooked. And this is here's another performance that got overlooked. You know what I'm saying? And maybe they thought there wasn't enough of that kind of behavior from the Paris character, and it was like too much of this. But I mean, you cannot deny the skill level of these actors. I mean, it's just as good as it gets. So anyway, so I want to discuss how I think Jamie Babbitt decided to shoot Paris crying scene.
Yes, yes. Sorry, okay. We got so sidetracked.
One thing that is so incredibly difficult is to break down to that degree in front of a camera in a scene. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do. You need to have a skill set that's finely honed and an instrument that's finely tuned yourself, right? So to do that in front of a camera several different times from several different camera angles is daunting.
Yes, yes.
It's like, well, you got to do it in the master shot. And then we're going to, you know, take 20 minutes and set up this camera over here so we can catch your left profile and then the right profile. And we're going to set up another. And you got to keep.
Right.
So what I think Jamie Babbitt did, and I definitely think she did, is she shot, she did dual cameras. So she shot two cameras at the same time. It's hard to do it if it's cameras facing each other because then you see the other cameras, right? So it had to be angled in a certain way so that, and it's always, because I was in this situation yesterday on this show where I said, listen, this is a big scene and it's a highly emotional scene and the DP had already taken care of it. He'd already anticipated that, you know, I'm not going to make Scott do this 10 times.
Right.
He's gonna do it once or twice, and we're gonna cover it. Mm-hmm. And so he designed a shot, a camera, a sequence, and a camera positioning that allowed me to do that. Thank you, Eric,
smart,
so much.
Yeah.
Yes,
it makes sense.
Yes,
that makes sense because mm-hmm. that she could never. I mean, I'm sure someone could, but I just feel like the reason that scene was so amazing mm-hmm. is you're right. We probably are watching the first time, second time she did it.
Right.
And I will say, like, I think if a girl, forget the C-SPAN part, but a girl sleeps with her boyfriend and then doesn't get into the college of her dreams, that is exactly what would happen.
You're
crying on a stairwell with your best friend. Yeah. It just felt like,
yeah.
And you're all confused and you don't know what the hell, life has no meaning. What am I doing?
Right.
And I think her thinking she didn't get into Harvard because she slept with him is really what a teenager would think. She definitely didn't get the credit for how good she was throughout the series, but in this episode, I was like, wow.
This episode was stunning. Yeah. It was stunning. This episode was stunning.
I cried.
My favorite so far, because it was the perfect perfect balance of emotional impact and humor. And that's what I want from it. I want to feel, I don't necessarily want to tear up all over the place, but I want to feel for these characters and I want to have some chuckles, you know?
Yeah.
I want to be delighted and surprised and moved. And it does all those things. It's a beautiful episode. Absolutely beautiful episode.
Agreed.
Bravo to Amy Sherman-Palladino. Bravo to
Liza.
Jamie Babbitt, who we had a nickname for Jamie Babbitt. She used to we called her Takeity McTake. She did a lot of takes sometimes. You know, she did 30 takes.
Scripty too. Don't forget Scripty.
Scripty and Takeity McTake. Yeah. So Jamie loved to do a lot of coverage. Okay. And that, I think that's to her credit, because I think the demands from the editors of that show were like, you know, the first episode you did, we didn't have enough, you didn't shoot enough coverage and we didn't have enough stuff to build a scene around. So just give us more than we need. And I think that was the dictate coming from on high. You know, the Jess walk and talk before I pushed him into the lake. That was a Jamie Babbitt episode.
Oh,
we did 30 takes of that.
Oh my God.
We did 30 takes of that walk and talk before I pushed him in. We did one or two takes of
I think Milo told us two.
Right. Right.
But you did the other part. Wow.
30 times.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great episode. It's just a great show.
It's a great episode.
It's just a great show.
So my notes are telling me there wasn't a lot in this week that sort of stood out. So in the cold open, I asked myself what book Lorelei was reading at the top of this episode, and it's I'm With the Band, The Tell All by Pamela DeBars. Remember Rory referred to Lorelei as Pamela DeBars when Zach was hitting on her in Lorelei Out of Water with that's the book. Okay, number two, Clown Pillow in the scene when Rory and Paris are on the phone with Headmaster Charleston.
Good eye.
So there you go. Best line, according to notes, is Rory's dragging Paris off the stage after her speech. Pack your chastity belt, Gilmore. You're going to Harvard. And Jamie did such a great job. And it's like, directing is like, it's knowing where to put the camera.
Yeah.
And I think she put the camera in every best position in every single part of every scene. So I really saw her talent run amok in this episode. So when you get that combined with the great script and the great acting, it's like, hello. Perfect way to spend 40 minutes on Netflix.
And not for nothing.
Right.
Female director. I like it.
Oh, she was great. She's super smart and super soulful, and she's just a wonderful talent.
I love it.
So bravo for the whole thing. Anyway, I guess that's it, right? Let's wrap
What's this. Next week? Yeah.
God, what's next week? God, I don't even know. What is it? Next episode is The Tales, A Tale of Pose and Fire. Wait a minute, A Tale of Pose and Fire? Wow. Season 3, episode 17.
Oh, I know it's. I know this episode. I know this episode.
A Tale of Pose, as in Edgar Allan Poe. And fire. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Tara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. I'll work
on my interrupting as I interrupt you. I'll work on my interrupting. I'm supposed to stop doing it. I'm working on it.
Who's telling you to stop doing it?
Everybody, but also
really?
The best Instagram ever. Somebody wrote, because you know, I read all the comments. Somebody wrote, for the love of God, Amy, stop interrupting, or something like that. I get so excited. I apologize because I care so much, and I want to hear. I want to converse.
I love the back and forth. We don't have to stop interrupting. Why?
Okay. All right. Fine. Okay. Fine. I'll take the heat on the Instagram. Look,
no, I'll take the heat because now I'm saying I want the interrupting. So now,
yeah, because we get so excited, we want to like. But what about this? What about this? So,
yeah, right. We don't want to forget. We want to make our points. You know.
I'll try and take a breath.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. See you next time. Everybody, and don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IamAllInPodcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. Grade one specialty coffee.
Summer, the best time of the year usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.